south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started. Expat wannabes ask me a lot as to whether or not they should bring their own electronic gadgets and stuff down instead of buying them here. And they want to know if they can get all the name brands like Samsung and Sony and Apple down here. And they want to know if all the software they're loaded with is in Spanish or English. And if it's in Spanish, can you convert it to English easily? Then they ask me if you've got the variety you've got in the States and can get all the models and add-ons and aftermarket stuff that goes along with all those toys and gadgets these days. But the main thing is, if you've got a lot of electronic junk up in the States, TVs, smartphones, surround sound, home theaters and stuff, well, since first worlders are all loaded down with that stuff, expat wannabes ask a very good question. Wouldn't it be better to just pack that junk up and bring it on down as used items? That way you don't have to pay new item import duties. At least that's what most people up in the first world would think. Well, yes and no. And it's a yes if you can actually carry it by hand and walk it on through. You know, get it all on the airplane, even if you have to pay a little extra, because generally you're only allowed 2 or 3 pieces of stowable luggage, or 50 pounds of luggage weight. You hear that figure thrown around all the time at airports. Because you see, if you walk it on through customs like that, and what you're hand carrying through isn't in its original box or wrapper, it's obviously a used item, and 99 out of 100 times they'll just wave you right through. Sure, you'll have to box that stuff up in one way or another, as long as it's not brand spanking new and sealed in the original box or wrapper. However, you can bring a certain amount of brand new stuff through, too, and no one will say a thing. That is if you're off the tourist track. If you bring brand new stuff into Panama or Costa Rica, if it's obviously in the box and new, oftentimes they'll ask you for the receipt and nail you with an import tax, right then and there at the airport. And depending on the item, it could be up to 33% of what you paid for it, what you have on your invoice. And if you don't happen to have a receipt, they'll decide what it's worth by referencing it to some kind of a master list they all seem to have. And you'll have absolutely no bargaining power whatsoever. They'll tell you what you have to pay and that's it. And that's what happens when you're on the tourist trail, because customs officials there have long ago figured out that gringos will fork out the dough. A 50 buck tax on a new DVD player you might be bringing in is a bit of an irritation, but it's no big deal. It's not the end of the world. It's not a week's salary like it is for the locals. How do you think governments in those high volume tourist zones make money? By gouging gringos when they can, of course. And gringos on vacation will fork out the dough. An extra 50 or 100 bucks isn't going to stop them from having a good time, and government officials have figured that out. However, if you're off the tourist trail, and let's say you're flying in from Dallas to Tegucigalpa, Honduras, what you'll see when you land and pick up your luggage is, first of all, practically no gringos. Secondly, you'll see a lot of short, brown Latin people flying in from the States or other Latin American countries, oftentimes carrying more boxes and packages that a human was built to handle. And perhaps 95% of those packages and boxes won't be original. It'll be repackaged stuff. They really are bringing in new TVs and printers and stereo equipment that they're trying to pass off as used. And you know, they're not fooling the customs agents. Off the tourist track, locals get away with that all the time. There, the customs agents are very lenient. Or should I say, lazy and lenient. Which describes about 98% of all government workers in Latin America. That's yet another reason why expats love it down here so much. But there is a limit, and you only can push these guys so far. And that limit is approximately what you're physically able to carry. Now, you might wonder why every Latin visitor to the States comes back to his country with armloads and suitcases full of stuff. Obviously, your first thought must be that you can't get some of that stuff down here, or if you can, it's way too expensive. With all that electronic junk coming on through, you have to assume that it's much cheaper in the States. Well, you know, 5 or so years ago, that was definitely true. All that manufactured, medium and high-tech electronic stuff was a lot cheaper in the States. But now, with globalization and the flood of products from Korea and China, Indonesia, Mexico, India, you name it, Now, in most cases, there's almost no price differential at all, which makes you wonder why so many Latins coming back from the States still play that game. Well, you know, all I can make of it is that most Latins haven't really figured it out yet, that the price differential is almost gone, and it's not really worth the effort anymore. As usual, there's that lag time, and Latins are a little slow to catch on. And to prove that that differential is almost gone, let me give you some examples here. I'm looking at the Sunday ads in the biggest El Salvador newspaper, and there's a full page with televisions being sold by a well-known Latin American electronics chain called Curaçao, kind of their version of Best Buy. Now here they have a 32-inch LCD LG brand television for $375. The reason why I mention this model is because it's in Consumer Reports magazine as a Best Buy. Now, Consumer Reports says you can get that same model in the States for between $330 and $350. So what's the differential between buying it in El Salvador or buying it in Miami? About $35, right? But you have to consider that Florida has a 6% sales tax. And when you buy anything in Latin America, their sales tax, called IVA, I-V-A, that's included in the price and never added on later like it would be in Florida. So if you buy that TV in Miami for $330, the 6% sales tax on that's $20. So in the end, you save about $25 if you buy that thing in the States. And now you gotta pack it up, scuff it up a bit to make it look used, drag it on the plane and through customs, and when you get it down to San Salvador, your home country, sure you've got it there and you save $25, but it's no longer covered under the manufacturer's warranty or guarantee. Unfortunately, it works like this. When you buy something in the States and you look at the fine print on that guarantee, you'll find it almost always says, valid only in the continental United States. And even if it doesn't have that restriction, good luck taking it to a service center down here in Latin America. Sure, they'll be able to fix it all right and in a hurry. It's not like it was years ago, where your washing machine or TV would sit in the shop for a month while they shagged down the parts from somewhere. Now they've got the internet, and if they don't have your parts on hand, they'll have them in 3 days. But even if you have your warranty in hand, signed, sealed, and delivered, they just won't honor it. They figure, why should they? You didn't buy it from their local distributor. No money passed hands down in their neck of the woods, so take it from me, they won't honor it. That's even if it says you have a worldwide guarantee. Like that junk you see on late-night TV. Ab Busters, Ginzu Knives, and Chia Pets. That stuff says it's got a lifetime guarantee too, but you gotta send it back, which will cost you more in shipping and handling than the price of the product. And yes, down here they do have those late-night Ginzu Knife, Miracle Bra, and Ab Buster commercials. And because of the lag time effect, it's all the rage right now down here. In fact, there's really big money to be made in those late-night commercials here, which are ridiculously dirt cheap to run compared to up in the first world. And they work so well because the public is just beyond gullible, and they believe every product testimonial they see in the paper or on TV. I guess just like we did in the 50s and the 60s. Yep, it's that wonderful lag time thing again. Anyway, if you got a broken item and it's under warranty and they charge you anyway, who are you going to sue? Are you going to stand on principle and say, no, I'm not going to pay for this? Then it's a Mexican standoff that you're going to lose. You're not going to get it fixed now, are you? Then it'll just end up in the junk closet with all the other broken things you can't bear to part with. And speaking of that, here's a good time to go through the motions of what it takes to get something electronic, like a TV or a stereo fixed, and what you actually have to go through to get an appliance repaired. Well, first of all, in Latin America, when you take something in to get repaired anywhere, they'll make you pay half of what it'll cost, or the parts cost up front. Because you see, down here in Latin America, where labor is dirt cheap, parts are nearly always much more than the cost of the labor. For example, I had a nice stainless steel high-end Panasonic microwave oven, which I bought down here in Latin America, and unfortunately it blew out a couple of years past its warranty. Now, the most expensive part of a microwave oven is the part called the magnetron, which is the workhorse of the unit that actually makes the microwaves. It's the thing that buzzes when you turn it on, you know. So I brought it into the service center. And here's what they generally do, whether it's a TV, computer, microwave, or whatever. They ask you for $5 to diagnose the problem, and they get back to you a day later to tell you how much the whole repair is going to cost. Now, I know they do that in the United States, too, but I don't think they charge only $5 for however long it takes the technician to diagnose the problem. And, of course, they apply that $5 against the final repair charge. Now, the reason why they do that is because Latins are notorious for squeezing the absolute last ounce of use out of every single thing they buy. And people will bring in a 20 or 25-year-old broken TV, microwave, or computer that looks like it's been through a nuclear war, then steamrolled with a bulldozer. And some of these appliances are duct taped and chicken wired together and then were on their last legs 10 years ago. Yet they still seem to chug along after many heroic repair jobs. Remember, this is a very poor society. And for the majority of these people, the cost of a microwave oven is like 4 or 5 weeks' salary. And if service centers didn't charge $5 up front, then the owner, if he gets a high repair estimate, will just abandon his appliance there and never pay. And the repair center will have wasted their time diagnosing it and have yet another piece of junk on their hands. Years ago, that used to happen all the time, but these days they charge the $5 up front. Now, case in point, what happened to me in my broken microwave oven? I paid my $5 and they called me back the next day and said it would be $80 to fix it. That's when you have to decide whether it's better to buy a new one or get it fixed. But here's the thing. That $80 repair I was telling you about, $65 of that was the magnetron, the part, and the labor, only $15. Now think of it. In the States, you couldn't get a repairman to change a fuse for $15. In the States, it's the labor that's the big cost. Down here, it's just the opposite. And by the way, there's service centers and there's repair shops. Down here, it's just like it was years ago in the States. They actually do have thousands of mom-and-pop TV and appliance repair guys. Now, I know I'm showing my age here, but I remember when the TV repair guy would come over to my mom's house in his rickety truck, open the TV set, poke around, change some tubes, and that was it. Well, it's still like that down here in Latin America, even though appliances don't have tubes, of course, and mom-and-pop repair guys don't have cars or trucks. No overhead, so the prices are ridiculously low. So down here, you have your certified service centers, like Oster and Panasonic and Black & Decker and stuff. And you have hundreds, if not thousands, of those little mom-and-pop appliance repair shops. Every neighborhood's got a half a dozen, and you can spot them in a second. They're little hole-in-the-wall joints with a couple of rusted washing machines and old boxy TVs out front. Now, I tell you, no matter how low-class and hole-in-the-wall these mom-and-pop repair shops look, those are the places you want to take your busted appliances when they're out of warranty, because you're going to pay about half of what you'd pay at the regular authorized service center. And because of the dirt cheap labor costs down here, even the authorized service centers are half again as expensive as the same kind of work done in the States. And by the way, if your broken item is out of warranty, who cares if you get it fixed at the authorized service center or not? The little mom and pop shop will still guarantee the work. And I'm always amazed that when you bring in a broken computer or something packed with electronics, they can absolutely fix it just as well as the qualified service center. And the amazing thing to me is they can do that kind of work considering the really disgustingly crummy working conditions. They're working out of this hole-in-the-wall joint, and the extended family is always living somewhere in the back. And that includes the mangy dogs, the chickens, and a few parrots, too. Kids running around screaming, dogs chasing cats, wet laundry on the clothesline. And believe me, if you don't check the bottom of your shoes before you get back in your car, you could have a very odoriferous drive home. And you wonder how these places survive, how they make ends meet. But they do. Even more strange, you wonder how these guys can fix these high-tech computers and plasma TVs and stuff, because, you know, these days everything's so compact when you open it up it looks like a rat's nest. You know, it beats me, and I have some experience because in my former life I was an engineer. And even I would never want to take a crack at opening up a smartphone or a laptop computer. I'd probably never get the cover back on again. But seriously, a guy like me, an engineer, should be able to fix things like broken microwave ovens, since that's not really high tech. That's not even medium tech anymore. That's 50-year-old technology. That said, you might be thinking, if Johnny's an engineer or used to be, why doesn't he just pull out that bad magnetron and pop a new one in himself? Why does he have to take it to the repair shop? Does he have Alzheimer's or something? Isn't that what engineers do? Tinker with things like that? Well, you know, when I first got down here, that's exactly what I did. I fixed practically everything myself. That's because in the States, I fixed every broken appliance I had too. Basically, all engineers do that. It's not that we're so great at fixing things, it's that we have no fear of taking things apart. No fear of trying. That's one of the things we learn in engineering school. We just don't have that common man's fear of electricity in general. Every engineer I know has been shocked 1,000 times. That comes with the territory. Anyway, when you're an engineer, you feel guilty about paying repair bills when you know you can do it yourself. It's like a plumber hiring someone to fix his pipes. No way, right? But you know what? When I did my own repairs on my broken stuff up in the States, I could easily save myself $100 in labor charges. And you know, when you do that, it feels good. Then when I got down here to Latin America and finally realized I didn't have to waste a half a day screwing around with my broken dryer, I could pay a mom and pop repair guy 10 or 15 bucks labor and save myself a few cuts and bruises and some scraped knuckles, which is always what happens when you're screwing around fixing big appliances. After any repair job, you always seem to have a scar or two. So, that's one of the beauties of living down here. You don't have to tackle a job like that that might steal a half a day of your time just to save $100, because you won't be saving $100. You'll only be saving 10 or maybe 15. But again, if you're a dyed-in-the-wool do-it-yourselfer type, then maybe that's your hobby. Nothing wrong with that. But personally, instead of fixing the timer in my dryer, I'll call somebody instead. I'd rather sit on the veranda and watch the toucans and the parrots steal my avocados. To each his own, right? And since people always ask me about the cost of living, here's another great example of how cheap things really are down here. Now, about 3 weeks ago, I got into a really nice car accident. By nice, I mean it wasn't a total wreck, but it was a beauty. I was driving down one of those roads with a lot of potholes, and it was a very foggy night. Typical October-November weather here, the end of the rainy season, where often bad visibility is made infinitely worse by the fact that a percentage of cars, trucks, and buses down here do not have working headlights or taillights, something that drives us expats absolutely nuts. But since cops don't enforce that law, all we can do is be extra cautious and hope we don't rear-end one of those idiots. So anyway, I'm driving out in the boonies where there's not too many streetlights at all. So except for my headlights, it's dark. I'm in the center of my lane, going about 20, 25 kilometers an hour in a 50-kilometer zone because I know there's a lot of potholes in that area. I know that street. And even on a good night, it's hard to see them. And when it's foggy like that, you can't see them until they're right in front of you. So I'm driving along kind of cautiously, and a guy's coming fast in the opposite direction. And I could see by his one working headlight that he was hitting those potholes pretty hard. He was bouncing. And when he came alongside of me, he hit a pothole and swerved right into me, completely sideswiping my car from the front end all the way down to the rear. That's the front bumper, front quarter panel, front and back door, and the back quarter panel wiped out. Along with my side view mirror, which he snapped off, and it was just dangling by a cable. And the other guy with his one headlight kept on going. And to this day, I have no idea what kind of car he was driving or what kind of damages he had. But you know, I have visions that his car was a late model SUV, so that he's suffering plenty too. But I doubt it. It was probably a piece of junk because normally, guys and gals with nicer cars keep their headlights and taillights in good repair. Anyway, the next day I took my sad-looking car to the mom-and-pop car and body repair guy. And he had it for 2 weeks, and now it looks as good as new. And you know, my car is your standard, cheap, run-of-the-mill, mediocre compact. A perfect low-profile car that doesn't stand out at all. However, it's less than a year old, so all the parts are extremely expensive. Like parts always are for newer cars. So anyway, when I drove it to his house, he looked at it and gave me an estimate of $230 for the whole job. Now that included all of his labor costs and the paint. And you know me, I just had to go on the internet and find out what the average body shop in Chicago would charge for a repair like that. And it came in at a little over $2,000. Now, you gotta be thinking that there's something that doesn't sound quite right about this. It doesn't add up. Is my mom and pop repair guy cutting corners, big corners? How can he do the whole damn thing for a tenth of the cost of what it would be in the States? Well, it's like this. He paid about $30 for the paint, and he made $200 for 2 weeks' work. Now, for him, that's pretty damn good money, since most people make between $250 and $350 a month down here. So at that rate, he's making about a third more than that. And believe me, the guy's an artist. But still, why so cheap? One reason is he does it out of his home, and this guy's humble. He lives cheap. Now, here's a guy who can repair anything and anything having to do with cars, and he's never owned one. He can't afford to. But there's more to the story. He called me up a day after he had the car, and he said, Johnny? I mean, he said, Don Johnny, because they always do the Don thing, you know? Anyway, he said, Don Johnny, I have bad news for you. He said the two little trim guard strips that run alongside your door, well, he went down to the dealer, and they're $100 each, and I needed two of them, one for the front door, one for the back. And he was nervous when he told me that. And then he said, you know, Don Johnny, if you don't put those two matching strips back on the car, it won't match the passenger side at all. But, he said, I have an idea. I could finish the car off perfectly without those side strips, then on the other side of the car, take the existing ones off and fill in the holes, polish it and paint that side, and the car will look fine and perfectly symmetrical. No one will know the difference. Then he said, I guarantee it. And so to take the strips off the other side of the car, solder up the holes where the strips were fastened, and repaint that side completely, he said would cost me $60 extra. So the whole job cost me about $290. On top of it, he saved me $140 because I didn't have to buy the trim strips. And that, my friends, is how you do business down here in Latin America. And when you work with these mom-and-pop guys, there's no taxes, no paperwork, no receipts. But to find a good, honest guy like that, it's about word of mouth. This guy, for example, was referred to me by my lawyer, who has a tendency to get into little fender benders now and then, and he has nice cars and he wants to keep them looking that way. So this little guy is my lawyer's personal repair guy. But my lawyer did warn me before he referred him to me. He said, you're a gringo. Don't let him nickel and dime you to death. And guess what? The lawyer was right. The little guy tried. A day later, I got another phone call from him. He said, Don Johnny, don't worry. I don't have bad news for you, but we have to talk about the mirror on the side of your car. He said he checked with the dealer, and a new mirror assembly was $120. He said, you know, I can fix the mirror assembly part, fill it in and paint it like new, but the mirror itself is broken. So I'll have to go get one cut at the glass shop to fit. And that'll cost you an extra $6.50. And I hemmed and hawed a little bit on the phone, and I said, all right, do it. I'll give you the $6.50. I'm good for it, I promise. And you know, when I think about all told what that accident cost me, it just totally reinforces the fact for me that it's just not worth it to have anything but the basic cheapest liability insurance on your car, no matter what model you're driving. And that can be about $150 a year. Down here they call that tercero partido, which is third-party insurance. And it pays for the other guy, of course, and all the hospitalization for both sides, but it just doesn't cover your car in a crash. And by the way, if you do get in a car crash and both parties stop to get out and look at it, which believe me isn't always the case, you'll find it'll be almost impossible to figure out whose fault it was. Both sides will just lie their asses off. I've seen it. I've been in accidents like that. Not when I was driving, but when someone else was driving. They get out and they start pointing fingers right away. And why is that? That's because people break traffic laws so indiscriminately down here. They run so many red lights and stop signs that I'd say a good half of the accidents that I've seen are caused from a guy running a red light and smacking into a guy just heading through his green light, minding his own business. And when all is said and done, and the insurance company and the cops get there, nobody, I mean nobody, takes the blame. And there is a good reason for that. That's because your insurance company will always be on the scene before the cops. And they'll advise you exactly what to say. They'll actually coach you. In fact, down here, there's so much competition now with insurance companies to get your business. They actually have advertisements posted saying if they don't arrive on the scene of your accident within 30 minutes, you'll get a year's premium for free. And what happens then? Well, when you dial that hotline number, the first thing the lady says on the phone, and I've been there, believe me, she says, don't admit anything. Wait for the insurance adjuster to come. And when the insurance adjuster does arrive, he takes you into his van and listens to your story in private. And then he says, if anybody asks you anything, you're a gringo, no hablo español. I'll do the talking. So there's that gringo advantage working for you again, right? You gotta love it down here. And by the way, just a few weeks ago, an expat friend of mine had to replace his windshield because a rock bounced off the back of a truck and cracked it. Well, he went to the Toyota dealer and they wanted $225 to replace it, which was still about $150 cheaper than the prices they charge in the first world for the same service. He checked it on the internet. Then he went to one of these mom-and-pop glass shops and they installed a generic windshield for $100 that looks exactly the same as the Toyota one, except when you buy from Toyota, you get a tiny little Toyota emblem etched in the glass. Big deal. And you know, the little guy at the glass company said the breakdown was $80 for the glass, $5 for the seal and the caulking, and $15 for the labor for installation. Now, if true-to-life stories like that don't make you want to move down here tomorrow, I don't know what will. But let's get back to that El Salvador Sunday newspaper and the cost of electronics and consumer items. Now, December 2012 Consumer Reports magazine has an LCD 42-inch Samsung, a Best Buy, for $650 up in the States. Now, in that big Sunday newspaper in Salvador, they have that very same TV on sale at Curaçao Appliance Store for $630. Again, that's taxes included. But notice it's actually $20 cheaper here than it is up in the States. How'd that happen? And yes, these days, TVs and electronics and appliances come with a factory guarantee. Though, like I said in a much earlier show, if it's a 5-year guarantee in the States, it's usually a 3-year guarantee down here. If it's a 2-year guarantee in the States, 1 year down here. And if it's a 1-year guarantee in the States, it could be 6 months down here. And why is that? That's because big corporations like Samsung, Sony, LG, Ford, Honda, and Toyota, well, they figured out a long time ago that Latin third world consumers are not like first world consumers. All you have to do is take a drive through middle and lower class Latin America, and you'll see just how Latin people take care of their things. Basically, they don't. And it's not just about the lack of maintenance either. Like I said before, look at how Americans take care of their cars versus the way Latins do. A car that's a year old up in the States still looks brand new, basically. And down here, that same car after a year is going to have at least a dozen door dings from idiots in the parking lot who just don't give a damn. Same thing goes for their TVs and appliances. Think Latins ever changed the lint filter in the washing machine? Until the thing breaks down, they don't even know it has one. And like I said before, an automatic dishwasher might only last a few months, since the cleaning lady who's operating the thing never was told that you have to pre-rinse the corn kernels and rice off the plate before you put it in the dishwasher. Oops, you see what I mean? So basically, big manufacturers know about cultural differences and they adjust their warranties accordingly. No wonder when you're driving through a wealthy neighborhood and you catch a glimpse of socks, bras, and underwear out on the clothesline. It's not that the family prefers that time-tested natural outdoor drying technique. It's because the cleaning lady is either afraid of using the dryer, she doesn't know how to use it, or she ruined it a long, long time ago.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.